Hey friends, you are listening to the Holistic Travel Nurse Podcast. Thanks for stopping by and checking me out. And I usually give you uplifting and I try to inform you about how to take care of your health naturally. Lately, I've just been informing you because the censorship and the weight of the world is just flipped. And so I have lots of episodes on that kind of stuff, and I'll put more episodes out on that as I be prayerful, because I know that the closer we go back to nature, the better health we have are. And my God, if you watch the TV, they want you to think that you're going to have better health with vaccines. And I have friends that believe that, and I believe the propaganda that they've been told for 8 years in medical school or whatever, that vaccines will give you the antibodies and stronger immune system. And I, in theory, agree, but disagree. And that's where we have to be with some of the stuff. This episode you're going to listen to is actually Dr. Mercola, of some of his stuff that's been pulled. And this is about EMF. And this is really interesting because I think there's a 5G connection to everything that's going on right now. And I got to find more information about that. And, you know, I feel like we're in a little microwave. Do you know, I mean, there was a video back on YouTube, don't know if it's still there, where they used, you turn up to a certain level of 5G, and they use it as a weapon. So now we have it in everything, and could it be causing you harm in your body? So that's this conversation. And then there's a little conversation that he had on there about hydrogen water. And I have a couple other episodes where I talk about hydrogen water. And something really cool, something we practice at our house here. And I hope that you do the same. Need to go see my lady that I get the hydrogen water, or you can buy the tablets, like he has the tablets too, but there's a cool place that actually has the hydrogen water for us. It's all kind of bubbly in the water. It's kind of cool. I'm hoping that you reach out to me and kind of give me your thoughts about this podcast. I would totally love some comments. It makes it where other people can hear it, and then you can share it with somebody else if this, like, what is impacting your life, and it's, you know, something that uplifts you or gets you thinking or has you process, you know, okay, so maybe I should look into this. And if you're researching things, which I highly suggest people do, you have to go to DuckDuckGo. The censorship is so, you can't go to Google and find the things you want. You can't, especially when it comes to health and certain other things that you want to find the truth of, against the propaganda that you're getting told on the TV. And if you think that everything on the TV is real, I'm sorry, we live in an age, I used to have these stupid beliefs too, that I'm like, I used to argue with my husband, and he would like, no, this, that, and I'm like, no way, I'd be like, that is just conspiracy theorist, Jessica's conspiracy theorist. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so blatant, how do people not see this different stuff? So, anywho, enjoy this episode about EMF and about hydrogen water. And I hope you are doing something amazing for your body today, like resting, relaxing, praying, deep breathing, stretching, eating organic, taking nutrients, going to get some hydrogen water. You're going to want a glass after this.
But the reason I'm here is that I'm attending SOPMED. And for the last 2 months, as I'm videoing this, I literally spent hundreds of hours compiling the latest information on the mechanism of EMF toxicity and how it works. Because if you understand the mechanism, you can remediate it. And SOPMED has been kind enough to put this 15-minute segment, which is one of the best consolidated presentations I've ever given. And it's certainly the most current as I'm recording this. And it's information I never presented before, and you get the opportunity to watch it here. So I hope you enjoy it. But you might wonder why I'm here presenting in SOPMED. Why isn't it a big event, you know, or a scientific conference? And the information I compiled and presented in the video is actually a 40-page paper I've written with hundreds of references. It's going to be published in a study, a review study. But I'm here because these are like-minded clinicians that it's a small group of individuals who are really at the cutting edge, applying the latest innovative technologies to get people better, to provide practical solutions, alternatives to the toxic strategies that conventional medicine has notoriously relied on, and focus on drugs and surgical solutions, and absolutely ignore these strategies. And these strategies work with your body's resources that seek to attempt to address the fundamental cause of the disease so that you can reverse it and literally cure it. And there's a wide range of modalities that are discussed here, but you know, it's interesting. In some ways, these smaller events are much, much better because you have the opportunity to dialogue, you're not overwhelmed, and it's just, and really the magic occurs in the hallways and in the small meeting rooms when you're talking, and the other people who attend who have loads of information you never find out otherwise and can direct you to resources. So I'd encourage you to consider to attending SOPMED. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised. This is my second year and I really enjoy it. There's some really leading thought leaders in natural medicine here that attend. So it's a really fun group and I hope you consider it.
I want everyone to take their phone out. Take it out now. I know you got one. I know you got it. Put it in airplane mode, or better yet, turn it off. Okay? Why? Even the conservative World Health Organization has classified cell phones as a class 2B carcinogen, which means possible carcinogen. But you know what? They're wrong. It's a 1A. Just like cigarettes. And folks, cell phones, there's no question of my doubt in my mind, are indeed the cigarettes of the 21st century. So, unfortunately, most everyone in this room was like I was a year and a half ago. We're either in denial of that fact or guilty of FTI. What is FTI? Failure to implement. You know, we got an example of the previous speaker, Dr. Levy, who pulled his cell phone out of his pocket. Obviously it was on. But it's the location. It was over his heart. And he's a cardiologist. Gutsy? Not a good thing. And hopefully you have a bit deeper appreciation of that and won't be guilty of FTI. So, I was guilty of FTI until one of my mentors, Dietrich Klinghardt, really impressed upon me the importance of this. And he is, as many of you know, is a leading clinician in this space. Been my mentor for over 20 years and helped me appreciate this. And in fact, he refuses to see patients unless they're willing to mitigate or remediate their EMF exposures. Because he knows, he's in the trenches, he sees patients, some of the sickest patients all over the world, that they will not get better until they remediate their EMFs. He doesn't have time to waste. I attempted to consolidate this information about how EMF causes biological damage. One of my guests is I get the opportunity because of what I've done in life to have the luxury of having free time to walk on the beach and read and get some sunshine, but also to have been an editor for my website for 20 years. So I never thought I'd be a writer, but I wanted to be a writer, so I've got these editing skills. So I put it together. And I haven't written a scientific paper for a while. The last one I wrote was 20 years ago with Dietrich Klinghardt. It was on chlorella and mercury detoxification. So I'm writing a new paper now, and I'm going to consolidate that paper for you because it is the most important piece of document I've written. I've been putting over 300 hours on this in the last 3 months and read thousands of pages to put this together. I'm going to share with you the highlights. So, how do cell phones cause cancer? The paper I've written is only possible because it's written on the shoulder of giants. One of those giants is Dr. Mark Paul, P-A-L-L. And he wrote a landmark paper in 2013 that identified the mechanism. Essentially, he reviewed 24 studies that analyzed the influence of calcium channel blockers on in vitro and animal studies, and they noticed that it radically attenuated the damage, the oxidative damage of these evaluations. So I have a limited time here, so I'm not going to be able to elucidate elaborately on that, but he is a pretty good speaker, very good molecular biologist, and I think he's a candidate for Nobel Prize for discovering this. Every bit as important as discovery of nitric oxide, which plays into this, by the way. But you can type in his name, Martin Paul, in EMF, on the YouTube search engine, and you'll get dozens of his lectures. And I've listened to most of them, they're just great. So that would be a tool, a resource for you to expand your knowledge. But I'm going to seek to consolidate his information here. Essentially, it revolves around the voltage-gated calcium channel. And these are in your cell membranes. Some tissues have higher densities of them, like your nervous tissue, like the pacemaker of your heart. And in fact, if you have a patient with arrhythmias, you really want to look into this. You want to make sure they're not holding your cell phone over your heart. Not a good thing, because it's definitely going to increase the risk for arrhythmias. And it does it through this mechanism. So the purpose of a calcium channel is it allows the influx of calcium that was a relatively high concentration outside the cell to flow into the cell. And calcium ions are a very important biological modulator. Problem is, when those calcium channels are activated by EMFs, well, let me back step one, because I went a few extra minutes because two people know shit, so it's great. The safety standards for your cell phone are based on thermal radiation. Okay? What does that mean? That means it's microwave. Essentially, your cell phone signal is in the microwave range. It's frequency. It's a few gigahertz. And that will vibrate ions, charged particles, inside and outside your cells. When you vibrate quickly, it'll cause heat, just like it does in a microwave oven. And they are absolutely correct. Your cell phone does not have enough energy to cause thermal damage in your tissue. It will not. But that's not how they cause damage. It's non-thermal, and this is the mechanism. And in fact, those charged particles inside and outside the cell respond to the radio frequencies, and they vibrate. But these voltage-gated calcium channels, and Paul, he's a physicist too, he's done the calculations. They are, how much more sensitive are these channels to EMF than the charged particles that the safety standards are based on? Yes? 10. That's a good start. Anyone else? 100? A million? Are you serious? It's 7 million. 7.2 million. So what does that mean? That means that the safety standards that your cell phones are based on are off by a factor of 7.2 million. 7.2 million. So these channels react to the frequencies, and what happens essentially is it causes oxidative damage. And one of the primary biological molecules that contributes to this is peroxynitrate. Now, who's heard of peroxynitrate before? Not many people. And don't be ashamed of that. I mean, it's definitely something. You are definitely ahead of the pack on this one, because if you go into a conventional medical lecture, it's like virtually no one, right? Well, the other giant that I based my paper on, and I would, if you have an interest in this area, I would strongly encourage you to get this paper. It's by Paul Potcher, who is an MD, PhD of NIH. And it's in Physiological Review. It was published 11 years ago, 140 pages. And it will blow your mind. It took me a week to read this article. is written relative. It's not complex molecular biology. It's written pretty easily, which is a rare exception because I read lots of studies, and this one's easy to read. So all you have to do is go into Google, type in that headline, nitric oxide and peroxynitrate, in Health and Disease, and you'll get the link to the PubMed. And if it doesn't give you the link to the full article, there's a link at the right where it says full text article, and you'll get it. I mean, it is a book, and it is magnificent. It'll get up to speed, because I'm telling you, it will help you understand the confusion of this. Because when you guys went to school, when I went to school, we were not taught this. Most of this has been discovered within the last decade, maybe two decades. That's it. This is pretty much brand new, which is why no one understands it, or very few health professionals understand. So, and there's a pointer here. Lovely, lovely. Okay, so this is, what don't we understand? When we went to school, we, you know, Dr. Levy talked about oxidative damage. Well, let me tell you what the conventional wisdom about oxidative damage is. We have the electron transport chain in the mitochondria where most of the reactive oxygen species are generated. Usually it's superoxide. I'll go to that a bit on the next slide. And then that is converted to peroxide and water, or oxygen, sorry, with superoxide dismutase. And then further, there's catalysts that will take this to water and oxygen. And then if you stop here and you combine it with iron, that's a big issue that I have time to discuss now, you'll get hydroxyl free radical. Now, typically, if you read the papers from the 70s, 80s, even the 90s, you'll see that they talk about reactive oxygen species or oxidative damage. Like, no one's talking about the reactive nitrogen species are not even part of the discussion. Okay? They're talking about hydroxyl-free radicals. And there's no question about it. This is a very decimating and the most reactive oxygen species, or reactive free radical in the body. But here's the point that not most people don't get. This little puppy lasts 10 to the minus 9 seconds. That's a billionth of a second. What does that mean? That means it, because it doesn't live that long, it can only travel so far. The guess is it's like 1 to 2 proteins. And since these guys are generated in the inner mitochondria, that means they don't have time to cross the mitochondrial membrane, go to the cytoplasm, and go to the nucleus. They're not plasmanuclear DNA. Now, hydroxyl-free radicals are generated other than through the electron transport chain, especially with ionizing radiation. Those can cause nuclear damage, but most of it isn't. So almost all the damage is from peroxynitrate. Now, peroxynitrate is formed and is almost instantaneously. In fact, the reaction between superoxide dismutase pales in comparison to this reaction. If it gets even like close breathing distance between nitric oxide and superoxide, it goes straight to peroxynitrate. And this peroxynitrate does a lot of things. It's got its own life. It wants to perpetuate itself. So it blocks SOD. And if you inhibit SOD or you knock it out, that means you have more superoxide, which increases the speed of that equation. You have more peroxide. It's a vicious cycle. Vicious cycle. So this is a summary of what happens when you're exposed needlessly and carelessly to EMF. Okay? EMF exposure here, and this includes radio frequencies, magnetic frequencies, and electrical frequencies, where there's a lot of confusion about. I've been studying this intensively for almost 2 years. I'm confident of that. Anyway, hit these voltage-gated calcium channels I talked about. Liberates calcium ions at the rate of about 1 million ions per second. The most important, calcium is an important biological signaling molecule. It has a lot of consequences. One of the artifacts is, and Paul's written a magnificent paper on this, is the neuropsychiatric effects, in which he believes, and obviously there are other variables, but it's probably largely responsible for the increase in depression and suicide. Suicide is up 30%, folks, 30%. Obviously there's other issues going on, but this is clearly one of them. So the primary biological damage is done from when the calcium comes in, it liberates these things, nitric oxide and superoxide. They combine instantly, as I said earlier, to form peroxynitrate. Now, this is an important concept to get. These are multiplicative. So that if you have a 10-fold increase in nitric oxide and a 100-fold increase in superoxide, that's 100,000. 10,000. 10,000 fold. But if you had 1,000 of each of these, that's a millionfold. And in some biological situation, you're going to increase a millionfold peroxynitrate levels. So this is one path to increase peroxynitrate. And it's not a commonly appreciated path. Paul pointed this out, and he's such a humble guy. I mean, he referenced the paper, and I never understood that Patcher paper. He just assumes everyone knew about peroxynitrate because of Patcher's paper, but like no one does. So he didn't even discuss the implications of this, but it's massive. So the other path is the one I've been focusing on for a few years. And one of the other foundational giants who I believe is another candidate for Nobel Prize is Tom Seyfried. And Tom Seyfried has actually reviewed my paper and given me some indications. He actually sent me the feed, which I'll talk about in a moment, at NIH. So the diet here is another big thing that you can easily modulate. And I'll talk about that in the next slide. So these are hydrogen or electrons. These are electrons. So just to simplify things, the food that we eat as fuel, primarily carbohydrates and fats, proteins to a certain extent, but mostly carbohydrates and fat, are a source of electrons. These electrons transfer through the electron transport chain in the inner mitochondrial membrane. There's five of these cytochromes. And they essentially, it's hard to see here, but you may not realize or remember this from biochemistry, but NADH to NAD is massive. If you have a decrease in NAD, this transfer of electrons will not occur. You will not make ATP. You will not increase hydrogen ion or proton concentration here to drive cytochrome C or cytochrome C5 to drive the ATP synthase to make ATP. But the artifact of this, in normal healthy individuals, this transfer of electrons along the electron transport chain is not perfect. Ultimately, the ultimate electron receptor is oxygen, which combines with the electrons and forms water. But there's a leakage here. A normal leakage is like 1 to 3%. And when it leaks, you have an electron coming out, attaching to molecular oxygen and forming superoxide. That starts the oxidative damage cascade. So the thing is that you can modulate this change if you are metabolically flexible, if you are burning fat as your primary fuel, which is my best-selling book last year, Fat for Fuel, which... Actually, I never had a book. It was our first book that was the number one selling book in the United States. It was really good. That's an important thing. And I mean, it's not only just good for this oxidative damage, which is the core, the foundation of, I believe, most chronic degenerative disease. The title of my paper is The Molecular Biological Understanding of Chronic Degenerative Disease and Its Remediation. So this is one pathway that you can change the way. Now this, folks, is the most important slide I ever created in my life. I even modified it today. There's a lot of, I could talk for an hour on this slide. I just might be able to. There's a lot here. So 5 minutes? 5 minutes left? What?
3 minutes.
3 minutes? Oh man, I gotta get some slack here because I can't. All right. I think we're going to have a revolt if I have to leave in 3 minutes. Okay, so here's the pathway. The EMF we talked about earlier, peroxynitrate. This is the next step in the understanding. Peroxynitrate comes in, causes single double-stranded breaks in the DNA. Now, thank God you have an enzyme family in your body that repairs this damage. It's called PARP. PARP is short for poly-ADP ribose polymerase. It goes in there, forms ADP ribose polymers, repairs the DNA, and everything's fine. The problem is it sucks up and uses NAD. And if you have persistent, pervasive exposure like we do in this hotel right now, you are sucking up your NAD repairing, using PARP. And another enzyme family similar to this is sirtuins. They're like cousins, and that actually uses NAD. So sirtuins are important for longevity. If you don't have NAD, you can't power your sirtuins. So there's another pathway I just learned about. Dr. Savory sent me to Dr. Veach. Has anyone heard of Dr. Veach? He's out at NIH. He's done a lot of ketone work. He's probably the world expert. Veach works with Leninger and Krebs, and Krebs works with Warburg, who got a Nobel Prize. Probably the top molecular biologist of the 20th century. So Beach has kind of taken over the thing. He's done this research that shows that ketones, specifically his version of ketones, ketone esters, non-racemic, did the D, optical isomer, can repair this damage. In fact, repairs it so effectively, NASA's going to likely be using it for the astronauts. But let me tell you, that's what he told me. That's his major assistant was Bill Curtis. He told me that. He writes his papers for him. In fact, I want to talk to him right after this. I want to talk to him before the presentation, but it didn't work out. So what's the mechanism? So this is the mechanism, because I'm sure you want to know how it works. The ketones, see, you can take your antioxidants, vitamin C, vitamin E, glutathione. They are charged particles. They are not going inside your cells. It's not going to work. You've got to have your body make those things. So at NADPH, what ketones do, what are ketones? They're a very short chain, water-soluble fat made by your liver. They easily transport through any cell membrane. And they do that through an MCT, that's not beta chain triglycerides, it's a monocarboxylase transporter. They go right into the cell, right past the blood-brain barrier, and they are powerful HDAC inhibitors. HDAC is ketone deacetylase, histone deacetylase. And when you inhibit the HDAC, you get FOXO3A, gets activated. And FOXO3A just is transcribes all your antioxidant genes, like SOD, and catalase, and glutathione. You can also do that through the NRF2 pathway, which I don't have time to talk about. But so that's one way that it works, because you actually increase those antioxidants in your cell where you need them. Okay, so these antioxidants, CE and glutathione up here, you know, you use them once and they're gone, right? They don't work, they're oxidized, they cannot function. So here's the beauty of the ketones, folks, that NADPH is generated by the ketones. What the hell does NADPH do? That is a massively potent, and what is NAD? Why is NAD so important? NAD is the single most important metabolic cofactor in your, not only in every single one of your cells, but in all eukaryotic cells. It's responsible for energy homeostasis and through balancing your redox potentials. And it's a family. You got NADPH, NADP plus, NAD plus, and NADDH. And what you really want to optimize are NAD plus and NADPH. And when you have this reduction capacity, you can regenerate CE and glutathione. So it's magic. It's absolute magic. You can do this. You can generate ketones through the diet. Nutritional ketosis is, I'll get one more slide. Nutritional ketosis is somewhat minor, unless you're fasting, but you can only get to like 0.5, 1 millimolar if you're doing intermittent fasting. But you can use ketone esters to go up to like 8 millimolars easily. So I think that I've got 1 minute, and I'm on 1 minute slide. Just to let you know, I only have one presentation. That presentation is at 1:30, so I don't have two. The other speakers have two presentations, I have one. This is what I'm going to tell you, how to measure immediate EBAC, because avoidance is the most important, okay? You got to know how to measure this stuff. Is grounding good or bad? You will be shocked to find the answer. If you were here last night, I told you the answer. And how to increase NAD, do you do it through precursors, herbs, or an IV? Because IV is expensive, and both of you know that. I don't think it's necessary. And how to increase your ketones through your diet. So hopefully you'll be joining me at 1:30, and thank you for your attention.
Hi, this is Dr. Mercola, and today I want to share some really exciting information about one of the best ways to reduce excessive oxidative stress in your body. Why is that important? Because excessive oxidative stress is going to produce too many free radicals, which can be vitally important signaling molecules like nitric oxide, but when you get too many of them, from eating a poor diet or being exposed to toxins, they're going to cause some harm. You see, these excess free radicals can damage your precious stem cells, your mitochondria, your cell membranes, proteins, and DNA, and all this can lead to disease and premature death. Now, the Japanese have discovered a novel approach to address this with the most common molecule in the universe, molecular hydrogen gas. Now, they've done most of the research and in 2007 published a landmark study in the most prestigious journal, Nature Medicine, that catalyzed a mountain of science on the clinical use of molecular hydrogen gas to reduce excessive oxidative stress. Now, because molecular hydrogen is the smallest molecule in the universe, it can easily penetrate every tissue in your body, including your brain and important cellular parts like your mitochondria and your nucleus, where it can reduce excessive oxidative stress. Now, although the precise way in which molecular hydrogen does its metabolic magic has yet to be conclusively proven, we believe that one of the ways is that it activates the important NRF2 pathway that signals your body and your DNA specifically to create additional important antioxidants. This, we believe, is really the ultimate way to create antioxidants, producing them only when you need it, as molecular hydrogen only tells your body to make these additional antioxidants when there's excessive oxidative stress. This way, your body doesn't create these powerful antioxidant molecules when they aren't needed, which can cause complications by suppressing these beneficial, biologically important free radicals, which are signaling molecules. So, what the research has shown is that rather than drinking low concentration molecular hydrogen all day long, like many hydrogen devices do, or even tablets, it is far, far better to pulse or cycle high concentration molecular hydrogen once or twice a day. Now, sadly, there's a large number of devices and products out there that simply are unable to create high concentrations of molecular hydrogen gas. But after many years of researching this, I finally found a pioneer who has developed a very convenient tablet that does indeed create a high concentration molecular hydrogen gas that I've been using for quite some time. Most hydrogen tablets and devices create hydrogen concentrations of only 1 to 2 parts per million. And these tablets have to be used in a closed container or they simply will not create any hydrogen gas. Now, the tablet I found creates far higher concentrations of up to 8 parts per million, or literally 4 to 8 times higher with these tablets. And the best part is it does it in a very convenient open container without the need for a cap or a lid. And it does this by using a proprietary clinically validated process, creating a cloud of hydrogen nanobubbles. Now, all you have to do to create this nanobubble cloud of molecular hydrogen gas is to simply drop one of our H2 molecular hydrogen tablets into a 16-ounce glass of water. Here's the key, though. You want to make sure it dissolves completely in the water. You don't want to swallow this tablet and drink the water. You want to let it dissolve first in the water. Now, if the water you're using is at room temperature, you're going to create this molecular hydrogen water in about 90 seconds at a concentration of about 8 parts per million. Now, it's important to drink the entire glass of water as soon as the tablet dissolves. Otherwise, the molecular hydrogen is simply going to escape into the air. So to make sure you do this, I suggest setting a timer for 90 seconds to remind yourself to check the water. Now, the time, that 90-second time is going to be totally dependent on the temperature of your water. So it might be shorter, it might be longer, but 90 seconds is a good starting point. Now, if you fail to use a timer, there's a good chance 5 or 10 minutes are going to elapse, and by that time, you'll remember, and all the hydrogen gas is going to be gone, and you're not going to get the benefits. So it's also important to realize that if you use cold water, which is fine, the tablet is going to take 2 to 5 times longer to dissolve. So again, you're going to have to adjust your timer to make sure you take it at the right time. So another benefit that our H2 molecular hydrogen has is that it uses a special grade of magnesium as its carrier and provides you with about 80 milligrams of magnesium, which is a truly meaningful dose. Now, this is important as nearly everyone is deficient in magnesium. So, in summary, to say that I am really excited about the potential that molecular hydrogen offers for your health is a very serious understatement.